Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. I am cheerful right now because I managed to, I guess, finish my article for Foreign Policy magazine. Still needs some grammar done, but that took a lot of effort on writing all that apathy stuff. So I'm just catching up on everything and dealing with the migraine. But otherwise, today's subject is going to be a bit interesting because we have some news, but we also have some stories. Because for the article, my aunt actually went to Russia to visit our relatives in St. Petersburg. So I needed someone to go and actually talk to people there and see how everything is with their own eyes. And so she did. And now she's back, and you have quite a lot to talk about. It's going to be interesting, definitely. But first, well, Putin just gave a nice little speech. He answered the questions from foreign journalists for 3 hours. And thankfully, well, Medusa has now packed it all together in a readable format, and all I had to do was just translate that stuff. But, well, still, that's better than digging through all 3 hours of everything. Because there's a lot to talk about. With that, and there is also some leaks happening. Well, here's what Putin said briefly when answering everything. It's just a huge speech of what he meant when he was talking about this whole stuff. Just so there would be a notion. We don't care who the United States president is. We have always perceived ridiculous accusations against Trump as an element of internal political struggle. But he began to impose massive sanctions against Russia and withdrew from the INF Treaty, Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. The United States is burning down its leadership in democracy. That's basically paraphrasing Putin's answers to questions here. If the new White House administration focuses on domestic issues rather than pursuing the goals of global liberalism, then there may be changes in both the attitude towards Russia and the conflict in Ukraine. But no one is interested in Ukraine but the greatness of the United States. They, that is, the USA, are not fighting for Ukraine and do not want to allow Russia to succeed. They believe that otherwise they will be harmed. Everyone believes that Russia started the war, but no one wants to remember how this tragedy began. It started with a coup d'etat. That, by the way, is a blatant lie. Like, I'll be just pointing out the extreme lies about what he said. Yeah, because he calls the 2014 Maidan a blatant lie. The foreign ministers of France, Poland, and Germany came to Kiev and signed documents stating that the crisis must be ended peacefully. Why didn't the German leadership demand that those people in Ukraine return to the legal field? So they are to blame for what happened, along with the forces in the United States that provoked the seizure of power through unconstitutional means. Again, blatant lie, everything happened in 2014 in Ukraine was fully constitutional. Russia made every effort for peace, except there were about 76, and I spoke about this in the early war, 76 attempts to actually solve the Minsk agreements peacefully by Ukraine, and Russia denied all of them. You know, just saying, but not like Putin is very well endowed with information about facts. Agreements were signed in Minsk, but we were simply led by the nose. See, the thing is, again, Russia never actually focused on the Minsk agreements there. And secondly, yet again, Putin is complaining about how everyone just tricks him constantly. This is, by the way, the part where the Russian Z bloggers basically just hate this fact that, you know, why does Russia even need such a president if, after all, he can be totally, you know, he can be totally just smuggled, he can be totally ignored and just can be cheated. But here's like the best part. When German tanks appeared in Ukraine, it created a moral and ethical shock in Russia. Now they say the missiles will appear. This will completely destroy Russia and German relations. Yeah, I know. Not like, you know, waging war would destroy relations and everything. It's weird. As a rule, no one ever talks about the number of deaths. Our losses are several times less than the Ukrainian side. No, we have documents that it's about 500,000 casualties on Russian side. But again, I'm just commenting here because someone might be listening to this episode the first time ever and might take it at face value. According to our calculations, the Ukrainian armed forces lose 50,000 soldiers per month, and mobilization in Ukraine only covers the losses. if someone would lose 50,000 soldiers a month, then that country would stop being able to wage war very quickly. This has nothing to do with reality, and it doesn't matter about your political views. You just have to know slightly, you know, tiny amounts about the intensity of this war and a bit about military. Carrying on. I think the United States administration will force the current leadership to lower the age of mobilization to 18 years, and then it will get rid of Zelensky. And we are left wondering why. The Ukrainian military is technologically unable to strike with precision weapons themselves. This is where they strike is only decided by those who supply weapons. We have no illusions about this. Yeah, because again, the very same situation, you know, losing to Ukraine, not fun. Losing to NATO, a bit more respectable. But again, see, this is the idea. Putin literally believes everything that Konashenkov says in the Ministry of Defense reports, which is just idiocy. We will improve our air defense systems. Where air defense at, Mr. Putin? Where air defense at? If someone considers it possible to supply such weapons to strike our territory, why don't we have the right to supply our weapons of the same class to those regions where strikes will be carried out on sensitive targets of countries that do this against Russia? Saber rattling. If we see that Western countries are being drawn into a war against us, we reserve the right to act in a similar way. This is the path to very serious problems. Now, what needs to be done to stop the fighting? I can say what I told Biden. Stop supplying weapons. The fighting will cease within 2, maximum 3 months. Again, the fighting will cease instantly if you stop attacking Ukraine, but just saying. We agreed with Ukraine at the end of 2022, and Ukraine stated that it's not a member of NATO, but in such a way that it's very close to the NATO charter. I said that we need to think about this. The same applied to Russia's interests, the neutral status of Ukraine, and denazification. Who still no one knows who that is. And I was surprised when they started asking me what it was. Yeah, everyone asks you what it is, Mr. Putin. This is a legal prohibition of Nazi propaganda. Okay, but Nazi stuff is illegal. Okay. I'm just trying to make sense here. I had to listen to this stuff while I was writing the article, and now I'm just giving this to you. They always try to accuse us of waving a nuclear baton. Will not lead only to use, but even to the threats of use. For some reason, the West believes that Russia will just never be using their weapons. We have a nuclear doctrine. If someone's actions threaten our sovereignty and territorial integrity, we consider it possible to use all the means at our disposal. Again, you know, not threatening you with nukes, but threatening you with nukes at the same time. Today, how do we negotiate with Ukraine? The current leadership decided not to go to the polls. It is written in the Constitution that the powers of the president are transferred to parliament, but it is not written that they are extended. And with whom should I sign the contract? But everything can be agreed upon. Well, that's the thing again, Putin's campaign of delegitimizing Zelensky. And here's the best part of this. There is no need to create an image of an enemy from Russia. You are harming yourself by doing this. They thought that Russia wanted to attack NATO. You've gone completely crazy, haven't you? Dumb like this table. Who came up with this? This is nonsense. Bullshit. This would be nonsense if it were not intended to... This would be totally laughable nonsense if it was not intended to fool their own populations. To be able to say to their electorate, we must urgently arm ourselves, send weapons to Ukraine. But in fact, this is done to maintain their own imperial position and greatness. So this is the essential concept of what Putin said. Now, the problem here is that I would listen to this closely and do the exact opposite of things that he says, obviously. For one, of course, you know, the more he's denying everything, you know, the more we should be ready for it. About the whole nuclear saber rattling, it's been done by literally people everywhere, even Peskov and everything. And how we're all now worried? Well, you know, he now just is acting upon imperialism and either believing the propaganda himself or is generally getting scared. And he should be scared. Because again, one thing that I don't get is why are we so much cowardly here in the West? Okay, we have procedures and all this stuff. And Red Line will tell you much more about this. He just wasn't to Kazakhstan and read some papers and everything. He's the more civilized here. However, I believe that there is a certain line here. I mean, politeness and orderliness and everything, it's all a bit of a mess. However, you know, EU has its elections very soon, And I think that we'll have some good surprises there. And, you know, some not so much, but there could be some good options there. And I think people will take stuff more seriously. But this was important to check on everything. And this just ties into everything I've said in previous episodes. And you can just go and check them out. But before we get to the next part, I just like to get the whole shilling out of the way. We have the whole thing with our shirts and merch available on our fourth wall. The link is in our homepage, theeasternborder.lv, where you can just go, and then you'll also have no ads if you listen there. And also, patrons also don't have any ads. And we have a Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/theeasternborder. You can also just click the donate button on, I don't know, send us some Ethereum or Bitcoin or just PayPal things in the Eastern Border LV homepage. There you also find the link, because it's very long and hard to pronounce on the show. There you can find the link where to get like t-shirts and mugs and everything. It's this. It's the pinned post on the Eastern Border LV homepage. It's called our merch store, and then you can find the Eastern Border little tiny line shop.fourthworld.com, where you can go and, well, get stuff. And again, please support the show via Patreon if you can, because we're working hard on all this situation. And hopefully you appreciate all this stuff. Also, thank you to everyone who has ordered things. We have 3 orders at this point, which really feels quite nice. So that's neat. One thing that is important, though, is that it's important not to lose perspectives here. People in America are going to have elections in November. We have Europarlament elections soon. I just hope that some populists don't go and, you know, don't cause trouble. Which means that, as a public service announcement, go and vote for someone. No, seriously. I know that the Europarlament elections that tend not to get as much activity out there. But in this case, you know, do some good for all of our continent and go and vote. Oh, yeah. And once the article comes out, I'll, of course, let you know. But now I want to turn more to the leaked documents about Russia's propaganda stuff. Because, well, we have a nice little information. I'll finish up with my aunt and her study, just that these little bits of news were just too important to ignore. See, leaked documents from a source close to the Putin administration revealed that the Russian propagandists have a new target in their sights. They now want to convince government critics and opposition supporters. In an attempt to win over to the skeptical audience, they have been repurposing out-of-context clips from popular YouTubers' old interviews, adding their own messages in the descriptions. They've also tried coming up with news stories that they think might attract the attention of independent Russian media outlets. Well, not just them, just everyone who is watching everything, and that includes the Eastern Border as well. But that also alludes to Bellingcat, Medusa, Dodge, all these places. So just be careful. Dialogue.un, an autonomous non-profit organization created on Vladimir Putin's orders to spread disinformation, is now using targeted advertising and repurposed material from foreign agents to try and promote a pro-Kremlin narrative to those who oppose the current Russian government. As part of the initiative, Dialogue repurposed content from Russian YouTuber Yuri Dudy, who is a kind of famous blogger there, who was declared a foreign agent in Russia, and added captions encouraging people to go to the polls, according to a document from 2023 titled Election Campaign on the Internet. Specifically, the organization utilized excerpts from an interview Yuri Dudy conducted with the Communist Party's 2018 presidential candidate Pavel Grudinin before that year's elections. Dialogue shared the clips with phrases such as "if they come to the elections, falsifications will be impossible" and "Dudy recommends," and then used targeted advertising to promote these clips solely to social media users critical of the government. The document, written by Andrei Tsipelyev, the deputy general director of Dialogue Regions, aims to implement a, quote, relevant system for managing internet operations in election headquarters. However, the specifics of how this system works aren't really detailed. This relevant system is implemented with assistance from the Association of Internet Technologists, which is also headed by the same Tsipelyev. Other co-founders include propagandist Kristina Potypchuk, who owns a network of pro-Kremlin Telegram channels, and Stanislav Apetyan, a board member of the Civil Society Development Foundation, which is led by former Kremlin official Konstantin Kostin. Artyom Tkachenko, the director of the Regional Affairs Department at Dialogue Regions, and Vladimir Tabak, the head of Dialogue, are also among the founders. It was this Tabak's idea to try to engage with Russians critical of the current government, according to two of his acquaintances. A Dialogue employee confirmed that there have been long internal quote-unquote discussions about content and narratives that could work for a liberal audience. Quote, a couple of years ago, Tabak was already saying that he'd gone around the regions to help locals with elections, and he complained that they were all stupid, complete dipshits, knew nothing, didn't work with analytics, posted strange things, and did not know what to do with social media. Explained the acquaintance. All that needed to change. So he's changing it. Tabak's logic is basically, you, that is the authorities, managed to seal off the country, hundreds of thousands of people left, but that doesn't mean that their opinion doesn't matter. So far, the plan has obviously had very little success since, well, Russia is horrible with dealing with new media. I mentioned this in the article, but just so you knew, at the beginning of the war, and even before that, as they were trying to control their own information sphere, a lot of Russian pro-Kremlin YouTubers were kind of bribed to go to RuTube, which is Russian YouTube analog, which no one knows exists and no one watches, because why would they? And now they're getting paid either the same amount or sometimes even more than they were paid from the YouTube advertisements and everything. Now, I'm demonetized on YouTube at any rate, so it doesn't matter that much to me. But in general, these people have basically traded all of their audience for just governmental cash. And in a way, you know, they are now forced to do pro-Kremlin shenanigans now and then. However, yeah, they can still do these things, but no one's watching them. So now they're just paying for pure weirdness. Not at the same time, they are now making a new Wikipedia analog after the previous Wikipedia analog just, well, died as all the money was blatantly stolen. This new Wikipedia analog is going to start its operations very soon. And their idea is to basically just get all the articles in Russian language Wikipedia and apply straight up censorship to all of them. That's also going to crash and burn with ease. It's going to be so silly. So, what else did they do? Besides distributing repurposed clips from Yuri Dudy, Dialogue employees also credit themselves with creating special projects that have been covered by independent media. For instance, in the presentation about Russia's recent presidential campaign, there's a slide on press coverage of the fact that Vladimir Putin's latest address to Russia's Federal Assembly was shown in Russia's movie theaters free of charge. The news spread across Telegram channels, social networks, TV, Russian language media, foreign media, and everything. They just present this in the presentation about their great success. According to the organization, the total number of views exceeded 31.8 million. The presentation lists media outlets that are reported on the theater broadcast, including Osterozhno Novosti, a project by Ksenia Sobchak, Meduza and Dozhd, despite Dozhd and Meduza being declared undesirable organizations in Russia. Dialogue used their logos and slides, which, by the way, theoretically violates current Russian legislation and could be considered dissemination of prohibited materials. And a source in the Telegram told journalists that Dialogue highlights the interest of independent media in such news to demonstrate the effectiveness of its projects to the authorities. It's not hard to distribute and plant news in their own network of Telegram channels, the source explained. It's much cooler if it's not just a paid propagandist writing about you, but a TV channel like Dozhd. They sell it as evidence that Dialogue is so effective that it can even get the interest of enemy media. The source added that Dialogue employees are also trying to capitalize on the fact that independent media was forced to leave the country due to censorship, which may make it harder for them to assess the significance of certain news. Quote, liberal media that have left the country are out of touch with reality, since they are not in Russia. Therefore, according to Dialogue propagandists, they amplify news that barely interests anyone here in Russia. Plus, even though the Justice Ministry has declared Meduza and Dozhd undesirable, those working on elections understand that these are popular media outlets with a suitable audience that needs to be engaged and tapped into. However, the Dialogue's presentation does not really mention this, nor does it provide examples of other news events that independent media might have written about. It only includes mentions of short publications about Putin's address being shown in theaters. How exactly this helps dialogue influence and engage the opposition audience remains unclear. Nevertheless, propagandists believe that it holds more weight when your enemies write about you, explained one of Tabak's acquaintances. The media outlets that have left, Medusa, for example, have a huge Telegram audience, 1.2 million followers, and you need to work with that audience too. So, kind of makes sense. But I know exactly what they're doing, because for one, in our Discord, which you should absolutely join, I will add the Discord link to the post of our merch store. I should probably do that. Then again, they expire in 7 days, so I guess I'll just drop it in easternborder.lv and, you know, the description parts. And I think it's going to be also in the show description everywhere, but not sure how that operates. Hopefully it works. But I was sent on Discord and then in private conversation with Aretz, yeah, our old computer buddy that we made the Soviet Computers episode together with, a video where Russian government spent 10 million euros on the worst RPG game, computer RPG, of the last year. It's very pretty looking, don't get me wrong, but nothing can be interacted with, like, at all. And it's super literal and just, it's a mess. However, there's a clear theory of why this was made, because they had to account to the people with the money, you know, up in the government, who are a bit of a crony people who are older and have no idea how computers work, just like Putin. So they showed them some beautiful looking graphics and threw some buzzwords and just grabbed a bunch of money. Because the game looks pretty, just that there's nothing to do in there. And it's all very strange. It's the best way how to steal all the stuff. And the same situation goes with these journalists and all these ideas. Because, well, for one, doesn't seem to be working that much, really. Because nothing they do in the computer stuff actually does work. Oh, and you know what? Sorry about this, but I think I will record my own stories in a bit of a separate thing, because I really would like to cover all the news, and we'll get into a bit more longer territory than usual if I cover that here. So next episode is going to be my own adventures in St. Petersburg, because I have to specify some things. Just that as I was working on this episode, I realized that there's just too much happening right now to just put that in the episode as well, but that's coming probably either later today or tomorrow, and it's going to be free for all patrons. Like, it's just that I want to make an episode where, you know, I talk about how my aunt actually managed to do this, because I was quite surprised. It's just that she decided at one point to do it. But let's get back to the news, because that's the more important part. Well, first of all, we have a Ukrainian hacker group, Kyborg, that says that it's stolen 1.5 terabytes of auto-insurer client data. They claim to have gained access to the Russian Union of Auto-Insurers database and acquired billions of personal records from the past 15 years, though the auto union denies that its database was breached, obviously. iStory journalists studied some of the data released by the hackers and verified that it belongs to real Russian citizens. These guys were also known for hacking the Russian travel company Sirena Travel and Alpha Bank's complete client base. Meanwhile, United States official Senator Mike Rounds of South Dakota confirmed that Ukraine has used United States weapons to strike inside Russia in recent days. Well, the day earlier, White House National Security spokesman John Kirby also told reporters that the Biden administration is, quote, just not in the position on a day-to-day basis of knowing exactly what the Ukrainians are firing at what. So, well, makes sense. Also, Ukrainian Armed Forces Commander-in-Chief Oleksandr Sirsky wrote on social media on Wednesday that the military faces a difficult situation in Kupiansk, southeast of Kharkiv. Quote, the enemy is trying to break through our troops' defenses from two directions. Intense battles are ongoing, he wrote on Facebook. He warned that Russian forces are attacking elsewhere too in an attempt to, quote, stretch the line of the active front, end quote, and limit Ukraine's ability to redeploy troops where needed. Meanwhile, journalists at Strana say Ukrainian soldiers report heavy losses in the Kupiansk region, caused, the soldiers say, by the mistakes of their commanders, such as an ill-fated attempt to retake the village of Ivanivka, which is defended by 10 times more Russian soldiers than expected and protected by Russian drones that were supposed to be disabled by means of electronic warfare. So, you know, Ukraine also makes some mistakes. However, we have some news from The Insider. The Insider, by the way, argues that Russia's advance towards Kharkiv has stalled without achieving a buffer zone or pulling Ukrainian armed forces reserves from other directions, which military experts believe are the offensive's main goals. After all, we also recently had, well, Andrzej Duda and other officials stating that, you know, Putin's real goal is still Brussels and not just Kharkiv. At the same time, The Insider cites Ukrainian analyst Konstantin Mashovets, who has speculated that Moscow actually has had a large-scale plan to seize the entire territory of the Kharkiv region east of the cascade of reservoirs of the Siversky Donets. But he says Russia's offensive made early progress due in part to poorly constructed fortifications north of Kharkiv and Russian electronic warfare apparently succeeding in knocking out Ukraine's Starlink satellite internet access on the battlefield. Additionally, Ukraine's defenses were still limited by Western restrictions on using their weapons to fight into Russian territory, where Russia was launching its longer-range attacks from. The Insider credits Ukraine's halting of the Russian advance in part to the decision to replace the commander of the Kharkiv operational and tactical troops, appointing Joint Chiefs Deputy Chairman Mykhailo Drapaty, who managed to stabilize the front by more effectively using the growing resources available to him. Mashovets has argued that Ukraine should nevertheless pull reserves from other areas, shifting the military's attention to Kharkiv. But there is no consensus on Ukraine's vulnerability here. And Russian War Gonzo correspondent Semyon Pegov has even suggested that Kyiv might mount a counterattack in the region and push Russian troops back to the border again. Finally, The Insider compares the Kharkiv offensive to several past invasions and occupations of major city. Kharkiv in World War II, Seoul during the Korean War, Baghdad in the United States invasion of Iraq, and the liberation of Mosul from ISIS. The outlet concludes that Russia lacks the overwhelming force required to capture a major city like Kharkiv, and won't be seeing much results there. Which is pretty much accurate, because their morale is also pretty low. Meanwhile, in Volgograd, television presenter Sergei Mazanov has now devoted a second broadcast to filming and harassing locals mourning the late opposition leader Alexei Navalny. On June 4th, Navalny's birthday, Mazanov visited Volgograd's monument to the victims of Soviet political repressions and recorded two people leaving flowers at the memorial in Navalny's honor. Mazanov insisted that the small turnout shows that, quote, many people are starting to see the light, end quote, meaning that obviously they've lost faith in Navalny movement. In late March, following news of Navalny's death in prison, Mazanov filled mourners at the repression victims' monument and later read the names of 15 of these individuals live on television. These people, by the way, then filed a joint lawsuit against this Mazanov guy, but no surprises there. Local prosecutors refused to take the case. Meanwhile, we have some good news which carries on with the whole stuff that I've been talking about Gazprom lately. The Financial Times, citing a report commissioned for Gazprom's leaders, reports that the energy company, quote, is unlikely to recover gas sales lost as a result of Vladimir Putin's full-scale invasion of Ukraine for at least a decade. By 2035, Gazprom's exports to Europe will likely average barely a third of their pre-war levels. And China is buying too little gas at lower prices to make up for the lost market stuff, everything. And interestingly enough, according to the new joint investigation by The Insider and the Moldovan news outlet Malenka Strana, Moldova's former Joint Chiefs of Staff chairman, Igor Gorgan, apparently served for years as an informant to Russian military intelligence. The journalists gained access to Gorgan's secret telegram correspondence with his GRU handler, Colonel Alexei Makarov. The messages show that Gorgan regularly reported on Moldova's domestic affairs and visits by Ukrainian military officials who came to buy weapons. Gorgan also reportedly constantly bombarded, in air quotes, his Russian curator with requests to send Russian troops to, quote, cleanse the country of all fascist scum. In July 2023, just before a mass expulsion of Russian diplomats from Moldova, Gorgan stopped communicating with this Makarov guy and got a job at the United Nations Refugee Office in Chisinau. Following Wednesday's investigative report, Moldovan President Maia Sandu's chief of staff, Adrian Balutel, said that Gorgan's state awards and military ranks would be revoked. And some, certain actions should clearly be taken in this in this case. So that's it for today. Again, I will be recording the whole study of my aunt visiting Russia and everything. I just need to write a better script and organize it all better so that, you know, adding another 30 minutes of that unrelated stuff to this episode would be a mistake. But yeah, we're back, and hey, look, I even sound a bit more healthier than usual. So that's it for today. Once again, please buy our t-shirts. They are apparently sent straight up locally, and we'll get them to you. And I'm now going to recheck all the mail and everything. So thank you for listening once again. You really make my days better in these dark times. До свидания, товарищи. And remember, happiness is mandatory.